This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Spiegel and Holmes.
We're not afraid to remind people when we've had something correct.
That should be a tagline for this show.
Who taught you how to do this stuff?
You are right.
I learned it from watching you, Lawrence.
I learned it by watching you.
Afternoons on the Score.
Dig.
Yeah. I love this song.
It's the best.
This
song, whole album.
Song never goes out of style.
Smile on this album.
Shout out to D-Light, DJ D-Light. And getting Bootsy Collins on the track.
Damn right.
Just to be hanging out.
Feel that.
Dug the vibe and was out here. It's just a good song.
Bootsy's just a big Bengals fan, though. That's what he is.
Aren't we all?
Well, not with Susanna Hoffs.
Oh. I mean,
he's more of a Ken Anderson, Boomer Esiason fan.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Susanna Hoffs, because there's never a bad time to talk about her, ever.
We could just do this all day.
By the way, got a really nice note. Remember we were out at the Links?
I do, the golf place over there. We had a great time over there.
Yeah, I got a really nice note, because I go walking past our mailroom, and I was like, oh, there's stuff in the 670 bin. And Dan and I used to play a game of what's in the envelope.
What's in the envelope?
You know, we would play, is this someone that hates us, or is this someone that loves us?
Yeah, you got to make sure there's no ricin.
Correct.
There.
This is from Vince. He was one of the guys that brought copies of the comic book that I helped write, Radiant Black, and I signed it for him. And he's just really nice, talking about how much fun he had at the event at the Links, which that place is amazing.
Loved that place.
The Links in Lindenhurst. If you haven't been out there, good God.
We were like the fourth most fun thing at that place. They had a lot of other fun things.
Right. The mayor was there.
There was
free dogs and burgers.
And brats outside.
The Masters was going on.
All right, so maybe we're the fifth most fun thing. There was the golf bays where you could hit after drive.
Oh, sixth most fun.
Yeah, because the slot machines.
Because the slot machine.
Where you could theoretically win giant piles of money.
Right. Spieggs did not, though.
Just
Spieggs only
$200.
That's all he won was $200. Yeah. That's as much as he won.
I bought a round.
He did buy
for
round,
everybody. Bought everybody a drink,
which was crazy because you only had $200.
I know, and I got out of there with a small profit.
That's right. Of what's in your heart, that was the profit.
I got an emotional profit.
Correct.
I walked out with an emotional profit.
Getting home from there was not great. I'll just say that.
2 hours.
It was legitimately,
Lawrence,
over 2 hours to get back to Hyde Park.
I don't know whether you're holding me up or I'm holding you up or we're both holding the listeners up. But
sorry, we did promise Cubs stuff.
This is big Cubs news today.
Shota Imanaga. I wanted to show love to a listener that was really nice to us.
That's good.
Because, you know, it's not always that way.
A rare moment where the love was felt.
Yeah. So
that's a good point.
Thanks to Vince and thanks to everyone at the Links and Lindenhurst. A really good partner for this station. But you're right. Shota Imanaga was put on the IL. So usually when a big move like that happens and a team's been on the road for a while, a baseball executive will usually talk to the assembled media when the team gets home. The Cubs are at home. They will take on the Giants in a three-game series starting tonight at 6:40 here on the Southwest Airlines radio network. And Jed Hoyer talked about Shota and what the Cubs can do.
Yeah, I mean, this the nature of
our game. You know, I think that you're always building depth and you're always dealing with injuries, and you know, you always hope it's, you know, not one of your best players, best pitchers, but that's what happens. And you know, hopefully we can you know, figure out when we can get him back and get him back healthy. But we just got to step up. No one's gonna pause for us.
How do you view your kind of contingency plans for the rotation while he's out?
I mean, no one's gonna beef Shota, but we have to have guys step up, and you know, depth is getting challenged a little bit. But I think we still have pretty good depth and options, and we'll have to, you know, have those guys step up. I mean, I think Colin's done a great job stepping up. You know, since Steele went out, and obviously guys are going to have to step up with Showdown.
I'll think about Horton. How much internal conversation do you have to have about whether he's ready or not? This is what you want to do now.
Yeah, I think, you know, we haven't even met yet with our doctors about Showdown, so I think we'll get a sense of our time frame and prognosis, and then we'll sit down, you know, with Craig and the coaching staff, and we'll get a sense of how we want to proceed. Obviously, Cade's an option. He's one of several options, and we'll talk through the right way to go forward.
What has stood out to you the most about his pitching this year?
I think he's continued to get better from start to start, and he's been, you know, consistently good down there. He's, you know, sort of built off a good spring training, but his last couple starts were better than the first couple starts down there. He's been going six innings and throwing well, so you know, he's done his part in AAA. He's certainly throwing the ball well.
Is there a soft landing theory when it comes to a young pitcher about giving him the optimum opportunity to do well in his first start, as opposed to, you know, maybe not New York, maybe not in LA for the first
start? I think it's something you talk through. We have to figure out what our options are and what the schedule looks like to do it. But yeah, I think it's something you talk about. We haven't gotten there yet, though.
I know you have
Tyler, pause it there for a second, because I there's the stuff that we were talking about there with Kate Horton, and you have Jed giving voice to all of the things that we were saying in the first segment. Whether or not you start him in a place like New York, or you'd rather start him at Wrigley Field, whether it makes sense to call him up at all, trying to figure out, do you do this just for two starts if Shota's going to be back in 2 weeks, or does it have to be a long-term situation for Shota if you're going to bring Cade Horton up?
Yeah, we'll see if he gets back to it or gives you any more on Cade, but it's a good spot to realize. Yeah, he says the last few starts have been better than the first few. For anybody who doesn't know, Cade Horton has now made 11 starts at AAA in his last two, both six innings and 80 pitches. So that means he's gotten through six, he's given them 80 pitches, and the last three starts, he's only walked one guy in each start. The issue for Cade Horton has been control. And so you want him to feel like he can be under control when he comes to the big leagues. So that is a big deal. He did respond to the initial Cade question with a Shota doctor answer, but the beat guys kept going. And yeah, the soft landing is an interesting thing to consider. Could be this weekend in New York, or could be back home in Chicago for the Marlins or the White Sox.
Continue
like that. But how much does it help in terms of having the flexibility of those three off days coming up, like the next three Thursdays, in terms of your options?
It does help, but you know, one thing we're cognizant of is not, you know, there's always a thing you talk about, like, oh, do you want to just, like, not have a fifth starter for a period because you have off days? Well, that means you're pushing those other starters harder. So there's a balance between using those off days to optimally line up your pitching in mid-May, or you can kind of look at the length of the season and say, hey, it's better off to give those starters, you know, some extra time. Not many pitchers in this day and age like to go 4 days in a row over and over and over. Like, you know, so like using those extra off days for rest and the length of the season is also something we'll talk about.
You could also use, I mean, also presents the option of bullpen days, though, when you have those extra.
Sure. Yep.
One thing Craig said in relation to Cade a while ago was there are things that you can succeed with at AAA that get exposed pretty quick in the major leagues. And what are some of the things, kind of tasks, boxes he's been trying to work on and check to kind of get some of that in a better position for when it is his time?
I think, you know, the biggest thing is always just competitive pitches. I think that throwing non-competitive pitches in the big leagues you know, puts you in bad counts pretty quickly. Counts that you can probably pitch out of in AAA easier than you can in the big leagues. So, you know, this consistency of your pitches, not throwing, you know, kind of one good, one bad, but making sure that you're consistent and therefore, like I said, avoiding free pitches. You know, the difference between a 1-2 count and a 2-2 count is a pretty big difference, and that's probably the biggest thing he's been working on, and he's gaining consistency of the off-speed.
What can you say about guys like Colin Ray, Matthew Boyd, who have stepped up, and you're going to need depth, as you said, like it's going to happen. So guys like that and the way they started the season.
No, they stepped up really well, and you know, guys will continue to have to do that. And you know, both those guys are good pitchers. That's why we signed them, and they've pitched really well for us with a hard schedule. I mean, I think Matt's first 5 or 6 starts were against really good teams, and I think he grinded through those starts really well. So, you know, listen, it's been a good start for those guys. It's been a good start for our offense, but it's Cinco de Mayo. You know, we have a long way to go, and so I think that, like, you know, he's got to keep moving forward and not pausing to celebrate those things, but just keep moving forward and try to win series.
Realistically, is there any such thing as a 15-day IL for a hamstring situation?
Unclear. I haven't talked to the doctors yet. I think they're usually longer, but very. It is after that. It's a pretty wide disparity. And the truth of the matter is, we don't know today. We're not going to know today exactly how long it's going to be. It's going to see how the player presents himself, how he's improving. And you know, the most important thing with that kind of injury is to get him back and healthy for the remainder of the season, not to get him back. And I think that's always, you talk about, you know, returning to play versus returning to your previous form, and like that's the most important thing. And you know, it may take some time to get there.
He said he hasn't gone through something like this before. So how do you manage it when he says he feels good today, but you know, you're trying to make sure, like you said, that he's healthy the rest of the way when he comes back?
Yeah, I think that's the challenge, is like, you know, with guys that have done those injuries before, they usually give you a better sense of how it feels compared to other times. And he says he's never been through this, so a little bit of something new, but we'll have to figure it out.
So let's be clear, soft tissue stuff like this, good
no
luck.
One knows.
Good luck, everybody. And we've talked about it at the White Sox expense for years because of how often it's happened. But just listen to the quotes from last night. Listen to the quotes today.
It's a good follow-up by Bruce there. You put a guy on the IL for 2 weeks, but you don't know. Like, you might get through the 2 weeks, and he goes, you know, I could play, but it's tight. And do you want that if you're the Cubs?
Great answer by Jed. We want him back and healthy for the rest of the year, not just back. But even when you know and you think you're doing the right thing, Javier Assad just returned and re-aggravated the oblique and got moved to the 60-day, and yeah, nobody knows when he's going to come back.
It's like one of those really risky things, and we could talk with Carter about it tomorrow when he's on the show. If it's, we need Shota because we're getting ready, we're 2 games out of winning the division, and you might go, so it's tight, but you feel like you can pitch? Okay. Like, it's worth the risk because of the proximity to the end of the season.
And the fact that he's never had it before means he's going to be difficult to answer the question. But
right,
in your scenario that you just brought up, maybe you get to the end of the season and he feels more comfortable answering because he's dealt with it and he knows what it's supposed to feel like when he's ready to go.
Yep. All right, let's go back to a little bit more Jed talking about this Cubs team.
With Gordon, is there still some hesitancy in the back of your mind, or are you looking forward to just unleashing this guy who you drafted really high, seems to be healthy, and seems to be pitching really well, kind of knocking on the door?
No, I think the hesitancy is a no. I would say, you know, just trying to make sure it's the right time. I think that it's easier to work on things in the minors, and you know, he didn't pitch a lot last year. I think he pitched all last season, you know, may well have debuted by now, but if he hadn't debuted, I think that we would, you know, you have a better sense of where he is. Whereas, like, you know, because he missed a lot of time last year, I think that it's been good to give him a foundation in Iowa. I'd say that.
Even if this is kind of best case scenario for Shota, timeline wise, does it hammer home at all the need to keep surveying external options as we get closer to the deadline?
I don't think we needed this to hammer that home. I just think that this is, you know, you just sort of expect you're going to need all your depth. And I think that when you have moments of relative health, just realizing that it can be fleeting and, you know, things happen. It's a major league season. We play every day. And we're going to have injuries. We're going to have to where all those guys are going to be pushed. And we talk about it in spring training over and over. They're guys that, you know, get sent out in the first wave of guys in spring training. They're going to have a huge impact. There are guys not in the organization that are going to have a big impact. And you just have to keep, you know, have the guys, the acquisition guys, can never stop looking for reinforcements. And in the minor leagues, you can never stop, you know, trying to push, you know, guys to optimize, because you're going to need a lot of guys to get through a major league season. And this, I guess it reinforces it, but I think we all kind of know it.
There's
as well.
Plenty of examples of teams like the Mets starting this year, Dodgers winning a championship last year, that have won without their very top pitchers. So there's no time for anyone to feel bad for themselves, is there?
No, you got to move forward. And we're going to play a game tonight. We're going to play games, you know, the rest of the week. We're going to keep going. And so you can't really pause and think about it. You just got to, you know, have that next guy up mentality. And I think those guys in there have that.
That's Jed Hoyer talking about Shota Imanaga and Cade Horton. The beginning of that last chunk was about Cade, about like he would have debuted already had he been healthy and pitched all of last year. So this may be the moment. It's maybe a Cade Horton moment as soon as this weekend in New York.
It's possible that could be the case. Like, it seems as if Jed wants it to be the right situation and wants it to be a reward. It's a big deal for a guy to get an opportunity like that with a team like this. It's a big deal regardless. Like, if you're making your debut for the Rockies, it's a big deal to get to the third deck.
Yeah, but like this, man, when it's a good team, and, you know, all good teams usually have the young guy who comes up and helps you, that you're surprised he helps you.
Yes.
You know, or like you just kind of like, oh man, this guy, this is something special. And he adds to that component. And I thought Cade Horton was definitely going to do that at some point this year, but the moment may have found him. Here's Craig Counsell talking about Cade Horton. A few different cuts here. He was asked if he's made a decision on Saturday, which would be Shota Imanaga's turn in New York against the Mets.
Look, we're talking about Saturday, and it's Tuesday, or it's Monday. So we haven't made any decisions about that at this point. I really don't think we have to make a decision until the off day.
No, they don't have to talk about it. And so he was asked about Chris Flexen, who's on the roster, a former starter. Is he stretched out enough to go?
Well, Cade pitched yesterday, so there's nothing going on with him for a couple days. So he's... No, he's an option.
Is Flexen stretched out in a way that he might be an option as well?
Yeah, absolutely. He's stretched out, yeah.
So Flexen is stretched out.
And Cade's an option.
Cade's an option.
I wonder, like, that's another thing to write down on the imaginary list of questions for Carter. I wonder how much Counsell's opinion matters on Cade Horton. Like, if he goes, man, look, I've seen the stuff, I've been watching the tape, this guy's ready, we're trying to win, get him up here for Saturday's game.
It's a great question. It's a great question. I want it to matter quite a bit.
I do too, but I also wonder, like that's one of those things where if that's how he feels, I don't know if that's how he feels, but I'd love to kind of like the back and forth of it, of Jed being like, well, okay, but this is where we think he is, and this is where we would like to debut him.
To be honest, that kind of exchange is a dream to be in the room for.
100%.
For baseball junkies, for people who have followed this and feel like they know but want to know more because we're curious. I would love to hear that conversation. Does Carter come to Craig and to Jed and how it goes down, like, hey, we think he is throwing competitive pitches every time. He's not wasting any pitches. And then Craig's like, okay, that's what I needed to know. You know, like, or, you know, we think...
Is there a scout involved? Is there an internal scout that isn't Carter or Jed? It's like, here, I got the cut-ups. This is what you guys wanted to see,
hey man,
from him.
Yeah, but you're director of pitching. You're a triple-A pitching coach. You know, I assume that it's a Zoom at least once or twice where you're having these conversations. Let me ask you this. Does he know how to attack a lefty slugger who's going to destroy his four-seamer? Does he know how to do that? How would he do that? You know, is he going to be freaked out if this happens? What have you seen over these last few starts?
And what we've seen over the last few starts is Cade Horton be really good.
Really good. Three starts in a row. Here's a little more from Craig on how they're thinking about options for this Mets game on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I think how we want to pitch that day is, I think we have options of how we want to pitch, decide to do that day.
Meeting against the Mets in particular, or just kind of the state?
Yeah, against the Mets. Yeah. Yeah, we got an off day on Thursday. We got some length in, our bullpen. So we've got some ways to attack that game if we want to choose to do it differently.
I mean, let's think about this. Dave Roberts had a bullpen game in the World Series last year. This is the state of baseball. It's like, so having a bullpen game.
Didn't the Rays do that too when they were in the World Series?
Yeah, the Rays kind of, absolutely they did. Rays and Madden and young Andrew Friedman, like, were probably the first ones to show you that. But, like, the best team, the most stacked team in baseball, went to a bullpen game playing matchups with different guys with length.
I don't know if you made it this far into my list of things that I was thinking about talking about today, but that's one of them. Inside of the doc, I wrote in there, you know, what should the Cubs front office approach to Shota's injury be? Coupled with the Justin Steele's injury, aggression or patience? What lessons are there, if any, to learn from the Dodgers' issues with this?
Oh, there it is. That's perfect.
Because think about it, Spies. Like, the Dodgers, who are seemingly stacked, right? You just look at their roster and go, look at this. And then you look last year at all of their pitchers that were on the 60-day.
And this, oh, yeah, right. Tons.
Go, oh, there's a Cy Young Award winner there. There's a guy that they think is going to win a Cy Young Award.
They've got Snell and Kershaw and Glasnow on the injured list right now.
Right.
I mean, among many, many others.
And last year, right, it was May. Wasn't May with the esophageal tear? He was on the 60-day IL.
They throw the injuries at you. They had a million of them. And so when Craig says, we've got length, he's thinking about flexing. Brad Keller went two innings to finish the game on Friday night. That's a former starter. Drew Pomerantz is a former starter. Might be able to give you two innings. They could open with a lefty in Thielbar. Like, they could do an opener thing.
Yep.
I mean, it's like, it is no big deal to go bullpen. And they could absolutely do that if need be. Here's one more from Craig Counsell on the idea of Cade Horton possibly debuting against a good lineup with the Mets, or maybe a lesser lineup with the Marlins or White Sox?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think in a big league schedule, you don't, you know, it's a big league schedule. You're going to, you know, it's going to be tough line. There's tough lineups. Every lineup's tough. It's hard. Whatever job the AAA pitcher does in the big leagues, it's a harder job.
Did you see what the Marlins did on Saturday to the Sacramento A's and Mason Miller? A walk-off grand slam by Kyle Stowers against Mason freaking Miller on a 102-mile-per-hour pitch.
You throw it straight, they can hit it.
Damn right. Absolutely anybody in this league can hit your very best pitch at any moment. It's the Marlins. And here come the Marlins to have the White Sox over the weekend and the Cubs on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Of course, led by their radio broadcaster, Jack McMullen.
Oh, so you're going to be a man with divided loyalty, I see.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, I see it. I mean, see it playing out, Alex? You see it? He's going to be, uh-huh.
Now the nephew can get his
Marlins
wins.
Marlins Matt. There it is.
Dude, my Marlins podcast is going to kill.
Got to wear the orange orange visor, sit behind home plate.
That's a great bit, actually. I should do that. Just for
it's never been
game.
Thought of before.
No, nobody's ever done that. No.
Like a bright orange. Like, go bright.
I'm listening.
And then you're behind home plate so that everyone can see you.
I have an orange visor. It's not a Marlins visor, but it is orange.
It would be kind of hysterical if you just wore that at the game. I'm Marlins Matt. Not Marlins Man. Marlins Matt.
Lars, they cut up. You know, the Marlins do that thing where they cut up the highlight with the radio broadcaster. So the walk-off grand slam, they had the video of him next to the play. And there's a moment where he's just sitting there, like, drinking it in.
Feeling it.
Oh! And it's like, the walk-off grand slam, and he's just looking at it and feeling it. It was like, oh, my God. Just so damn proud.
It's
that
a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Amazing.
When we come back, our segment on Thursday about Bill Belichick was highly rated. Highly rated. People really enjoyed it.
I love, we all raised our hands at different time to get more context to further, even though it felt unseemly to be doing it. Nobody said, I don't want to know more. Nobody.
And it's like now there's think pieces being written about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's become something that I imagine Bill Belichick feared in his worst nightmares about his personal life. So there's more for us to discuss. There's more people willing to say stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk a little bit more about it next here on The Score.
On my podcast, Aspire With Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire With Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
Sir, this order will make it socially acceptable for a man in his 70s to date a 24-year-old.
That's right. We're calling it the Belichick Law. We're going to make girlfriends young again, okay? Old men can now date far younger women. We like that. It's hot. But in reverse, it's quite disgusting, right? Very Dateline, you know? Did you see Belichick's girlfriend? She's pretty hot, right?
Yes. She is a beautiful creature.
God, you're creepy. This is why we don't hang out outside of work.
It's from Saturday Night Live this past weekend. What's wrong with you?
The Money song from Pink Floyd is clearly an editorial choice.
That's their job.
I know, but still, it's an assumption.
That's my job as a producer.
I don't, but it makes it sound like we're making that choice. We would never say some of the things we're about to say.
I made the choice for you guys.
James Austin Johnson has been playing the president for the last few years, and he's been pretty good at it. And that was Stephen Miller that he was talking about. But if you're Bill Belichick, and I understand, like, it probably doesn't, some of this stuff doesn't reach him, but the idea of, oh no, like, I've done this whole thing, like, my whole life to keep things as private as possible, and now my love life is a joke on the cold open of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, he has slowly relaxed the stranglehold on his public image, seemingly led by this girlfriend who's helping him, and it's obviously a layered relationship where she has now taken a lot of professional control.
Oh, and by the way, I found out, remember I was talking about how Hard Knocks went away?
Yeah.
It turns out, at least according to some sources, that what I thought happened, she demanded to be executive producer of the show.
That's what Page Six of the New York Post said.
And they were like,
she demanded.
No, we're good.
Yeah.
We just won't do it.
So
we'd rather not do it than make you an executive producer.
The New York Post said that she wanted to see, quote, dailies of the proposed show, and said executives needed to treat her with respect or they wouldn't get to use the coach's IP.
Intellectual property.
Man.
So here's the question. If Jordan were just an overzealous PR person, would this be acceptable?
That's a great question, because she apparently like filed 14 different trademarks to reclaim phrases coined by Belichick, phrases which are currently owned by his former employer, the New England Patriots. So if she was just an aggressive PR person trying to do her thing, you'd look at it and be like, oh, that's interesting.
Because we've dealt with that type of person in our career.
For sure. We've also heard stories and maybe known closely some situations where aging stars were kind of co-opted by people who did these kind of things and also were romantic paramours and sometimes they weren't. And it's been very difficult to figure out. I just read a story about the painter Georgia O'Keeffe.
Yes.
Who apparently had like a wonderful relationship with a much younger man and who she met in New Mexico, who was a handyman and ended up being like a dear friend and protected her legacy. And rumors abounded for decades that he was a certain kind of romantic relationship. And he says he never was. And some people believe that he never was. Like, there's examples like that. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, like, taken over and co-opted by different, like, these things happen, and they're not always nefarious, but this one is starting to feel like that.
I'm not willing to call it nefarious.
I said it's starting to feel like that.
Because I think that what we have here is someone who has been given some power and is ambitious, and I think that that's okay, but I also think that when it comes to power, What Uncle Ben say? With great power comes great responsibility.
Is that before he converted the rice?
No. This is a different.
A different Uncle Ben?
Uncle Ben.
What did he convert the rice to, by the way?
Fuel. And then Dr. Brown came back from the future and they poured it in the flux capacitor.
Okay.
We're mixing all sorts of things up now.
We won't need gas. Somebody doesn't need? What do they not need?
We don't need roads.
We don't need roads. That's it.
Have you ever seen the Family Guy version of that?
Of the flux capacitor back to the future
thing? Of Doc Brown comes back and he's like, Marty, there's something horrible. Your daughter, she's going to marry a black guy. And Marty's like,
that's mine.
No, Marty's like, that's not a problem. Why would that be a problem?
Oh, God.
And then he's like, I am uncomfortable with you now.
That's too bad. That was a cartoon, everybody, just to be clear.
Yeah, just to be clear.
Much respect to Christopher Lloyd.
For real.
I know.
So this texter is like, hey, did you guys hear about the Dunkin' commercial? Yeah, that's part of this too. One of the revelations that's happened is she apparently kind of wedged herself into the Dunkin' Super Bowl commercial with Ben. You guys don't remember that?
No, of course I remember.
I remember, yes.
Remember the commercial? I didn't know that she wedged herself in there.
She did.
What'd she do?
She's like, I'm in this commercial.
Just staring at Bill.
Or Bill's not going to be in this commercial. Man.
That's all she did speak. Just stare at Bill.
So look, I applaud her with maybe, and some of this stuff might actually turn out to be helpful for Bill.
I think it clearly has been. I think like him being comfortable with social media and having a more youthful approach to PR. I mean, college football these days is all about, you know, recruiting guys multiple times and staying vibrant and relevant.
Yeah, but I wonder if this has done damage to Bill Belichick, the God, like in his players' eyes. Because if we go back before Jordan becomes a household name, like the idea of, wait, Bill Belichick is coming here? I better get my bleep together. Mm-hmm. If this guy's coming here to coach, this guy can help get me to the league, like all this stuff. I wonder now if some of that is worn off and players don't see him like that anymore, because they see him at practice being one way and now they see him with his girlfriend and it's like, ooh.
Well,
the group chats must be on fire on that campus.
I'm sure they're on fire. And people who have covered and known about the Patriots on a intimate level for years are taking notice of certain details. Did you see the Bill Simmons thing on the Bill Simmons podcast?
Yeah, I saw that.
Because she posted an email. Jordan posted an email from Bill Belichick in an attempt to defend him in terms of his role in the increased valuation of the Patriots, right? And so we know that Bill and Bob Kraft don't have a good relationship. So she posted this email and Bill Simmons read the email and realized that he thought the email reflected a lot of what happened between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, of Belichick's ego getting so big and so vocal about his role in the Patriots' valuation. And Simmons was like, that the whole thing with Brady and Belichick was always, we're in this together. We're in this together. There's no credit. We're in this together, which is the way it sometimes needs to be. And this email reflected Bill taking a lot of personal credit.
Well, and them not knowing that Bill's emails, now that he works at a university, could be FOIA. Like, there's a lot of stuff that they're missing. And I think there's a lot of good that she's also doing for him. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to do with this.
Did you say there was something that was starting to happen in North Carolina, or like people were starting to comment on, or just?
I was speculating on, okay, like what that might be like if they're. Yes. When we talked earlier, yeah, that there are people that are not named that are starting to be like, ooh, what is happening here? That there are people at the university now that, gotcha, are like, what did we do? Did we turn the university over to her instead of to him?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times it is a package deal. Certain coaches have had their wives very, very involved, and that's just the way it's always been. For some of them, it functions well.
But it's different.
When you've been together for a long time and it's clearly a partnership that's been worked out.
A lot, and it's different, and this is where I do think like the age thing matters. Most of the time, the woman who is the coach's wife, she takes on a maternal. Like, that's mom.
Absolutely.
You know, like,
that's the mama of the program.
And she's usually, like, for example, if you look at how
Mama Saban?
Yes.
I know.
Like, if you look at the way that players react to her and how she reacts to them, they would, Jalen Milroe, after, I forget which game it was they won, maybe it was the comeback that they won where he made the 4th-and-26 touchdown throw.
There's love. It's the family.
And he hugged her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or even like that's with what's going on in Texas with
Mama Sark.
Yeah. Like it's and she's super styled up and she's a beautiful woman, but it's different. When it's the girlfriend, if you're the players, how do you react
especially
to her?
Especially when she's
your age.
2 years older than you at most. I know. I'm not going to restate it. I told you how I fear that this thing is going to end the other day. But it's like, it's a hug. One of those post-game hugs. Just going a little bit too far. You know what I mean? Like, there's fears. There's it could be a scary situation. And it already kind of is. I'm sure if you are Bill's children, you know, or Bill's family, you're a little concerned. I would be if it was my dad. I know I would be.
Yeah, I think all of us can put ourselves in that place. But usually when they're like that role, whether we're talking coach's wife or coach's husband, you know, in basketball, we see coach's husband.
Is there a Mr. Mulkey? Probably. I don't know.
There is. I don't see, or there was, but usually that role is that person takes a secondary paternal figure role inside of a college campus. Miss Terry was legendary for that down in Alabama. And it's just a very strange, it's a dynamic that we're not used to. So we're not sure what to do with it.
Yeah.
And no one wants to think of our parent being in a situation like this. And you go, you don't want your parent being taken advantage of, but you also want your parent to be happy.
I think the only way to really fix this situation is for the Tar Heels to go on a terrific run. Like a good 11-0 season. And everything's going to be fine.
That might make things worse. Because she might be like, I told y'all so, and it might be the revenge tour if that happens. But I'm wishing them a lot of luck. I hope that it's just love. I hope that it's just love and someone who's being overzealous right now.
I join it. I join you in rooting for love.
Yes.
That's what we do on the Spiegel and Holmes show. When we come back, a man has changed his roles and still got his jokes in today. Let's hear it as we say goodbye before Cubs baseball on the score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Look at this duo. He's all grown up. Look at you two. I love the mashup between you two, by the way. It's like two great comic books that I used to collect are now a team up.
Afternoons on the score.
It's a big day in the NBA. Greg Popovich officially stepped down as the head coach of the Spurs.
He would prefer that you think about it as him stepping up.
Correct, because he's now president of basketball operations.
And Greg Popovich got to be out there.
For Mitch Johnson's press conference to announce him as no longer the interim, but as the new permanent head coach.
Greg Popovich at the podium with Tim Duncan on one side, Manu Ginobili on the other.
Timmy looks good, man. His hair looks great.
I think Manu looks good, completely bald.
It's too. A good look.
I mean, that's
they some both, of us don't have a choice.
They both have evolved follically, and they seem to be comfortable where they are. Manu fully bald, and Timmy with the dreads, the graying dreads.
Yeah, it looks really, really good.
The Islander, Tim Duncan
from the Virgin Islands.
Yeah. Before he got to Wake Forest and then beyond.
If you're Becky Hammon, are you like, Huh. Man, maybe I should have stayed.
I don't know. She was interviewed about it.
Because I think she would have been.
Think she would have got the gig?
She would have been in line to have that job.
It's interesting. I touched on this the other day with Mark Grody. There are five current head coaches who were assistants for Greg Popovich. There are three others who got fired this year who were assistants to Greg Popovich.
And we know one of them was here for a while before he got fired.
Yes. And then there are two more, Lawrence.
Terrible.
There are two more, Lawrence, in the NBA who were Popovich's assistants with Team USA, including Eric Spoelstra.
That's right.
So there are 10 coaches who are former assistants.
Spoelstra and Kerr, right? Wasn't Kerr an assistant for Popovich?
That's exactly right. So
it's pretty great coaching staff you got there.
10 NBA coaches out of 30 who are former assistants to Greg Popovich.
That's a nice tree. So what are you going to do now, Greg Popovich?
I'm no longer a coach. I'm El Jefe.
El Jefe.
So he had a shirt that said El Jefe. I forgot what he said on the back, but he had a little shirt. They had a T-shirt. They had him out there, and he was there for it. I love Greg Popovich, man. I've been lucky. The last couple of years, I've made a point when the Spurs were in town to go to the pregame press conferences because that's where coaches are a lot more giving. We get a lot of great Billy sound out of those. And watching him and Sam Smith just one-liner after one-liner with each other in those, and then to sit there and listen to the basketball knowledge that just pours out of Greg Popovich, I consider myself very lucky. It's one of those things where I'm happy that I did that.
Yeah, man, I'm envious of it. It's a legend and just like so thoughtful. And I remember hearing you talk about those times. And I remember what a great opportunity when somebody like that is in your midst. The T-shirt says El Jefe on the front and Senor Popovich on the back.
I like that.
And, yeah. And it's, you know, it was a little awkward and sad to watch because the man is 76 and he had a stroke last year and he can't move the left arm, can't move a lot of his left side. He can walk. And he stepped out to give a handshake and a hug to the coach replacing him. But as he took off the jacket, he needed Tim Duncan's help to take off the left arm of the jacket. And I saw some responses to it saying like, oh, man, this is cringe, blah, 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 stuff like that. Like, come on, grow up, people. It's like, you know, it's one thing. It's one thing to make sure that somebody, an elderly person goes out with grace. But when they're a legend like this and he wants to be there and wants to, you know, show that he's capable of doing the job and to have fun and show a sense of humor.
Yeah.
You let that man do what he wants.
That's a wrap.
I think that we often, I mean, I could go into a whole thing about this because this is sometimes us not wanting to see differently abled people. And so I think we need to get over that in some respects, that just because they've had a traumatic brain injury or just because they have what we deem a disability doesn't mean that they should just go and hide in a hole.
I completely agree. It's a different thing. That's not to say they should be, you know, managing a ball club or doing something that gives them the opportunity to be exposed. You know, if you love somebody, you don't want that to be the case. But,
right.
But a moment like this today with Popovich was beautiful.
I agree. I'm happy for him, and I'm happy for the Spurs, and I'm happy for Mitch Johnson. You got yourself a nice player to start over with, tell you that much, in Wimby. That's going to be a lot of fun as long as he stays healthy, which is another question that's on the table for the Spurs going forward.
A few of them. Stephon Castle, your rookie of the year.
Yeah.
De'Aaron Fox.
There's a lot going on there.
That could be
in
a very
San Antonio
fun team. If they're healthy, that could be a very fun team.
Great job by Alex and one of the Tylers. I see the other Tyler behind him, by the way. They're both in there. He's got Cubs
Tylers
baseball.
You know what? Nobody runs more two Tyler sets than the score. We run a
it's
lot.
It's R12 personnel.
It's R12 personnel, Alex. Exactly.
I agree. Right. For my partner, Matt Spiegel, I'm Lawrence Holmes saying thank you so much for the love and support you show us every day. We will try to repay the favor tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Cubs baseball is next.
Their young guys are at the peak of their game. You know, it's the blue-haired kid is you know, kind of a freak right now, the way he's playing. The new kid with the huge feet, that kid is what a hitter.